So might be an opportunity. Commissioner Salzman?
So this $450 million bond issue, this is the largest ever by
This is the largest new money issue that we've ever issued as a city.
As a city?
Yep.
And then I just had a question that it's kind of a general 101 question, but revenue bonds are backed up by sewer or water ratepayers or whatever.
Correct.
But are they always backstopped, or whatever that phrase you like to use, by the sort of the full faith and credit of the general fund?
Is that no. Right? Water revenue bonds, sewer revenue bonds are not backed by the full faith and credit of the city, so they're solely relying upon the revenues of the system.
Thanks. Any other questions for her? Anyone wish to testify on emergency ordinance item number 293? All right, Carl, please call the vote.
Fritz. I appreciate Mr. Johansson and the entire team at OMF looking for ways to save taxpayers and ratepayers money, and that's what this is intended to do, and I'm glad that you're always looking for alternative methods of financing that save us money. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Good work. Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Converting higher interest payments to lower interest payments is a good thing. Thank you. Aye. Can you please read purchasing procurement report item number 295?
Accept bid of Granite Northwest, Inc. for the Southeast Portland pavement preservation projects for $1,948,948.
And this is another example of American Recovery and Reinvestment Act dollars.
Yes, it is. Christine Moody, Procurement Services. In front of you is the Chief Procurement Officer report recommending a contract award to the low bidder in the amount of $1,948,948. The Bureau of Transportation entered into an intergovernmental agreement with the Oregon Department of Transportation to provide funding for this project as part of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. The city's good faith effort program does not apply to this project, as ODOT requires contractors to comply with the federal DBE program. The DBE goal for this project was 4%, and Granite Northwest has DBE subcontracting participation at 5.13%. I will turn this back over to Council if there's any questions regarding the bidding process, and Brian Oberding from PBOT is here to answer technical questions.
Because it's federal money passed through the state, we have to use state approach to certified minority women contracting. So,
yes.
I was just curious, maybe Brian is the one for this, but I'm just curious, given we had six bids, favorable bidding climate, how much the actual bid came in below or above the engineer's estimate of the cost?
It was 3.4 and it came in at 1.9.
Oh, did I miss that right here?
How was that? Did I intuit that correctly?
Okay, you're right. Sorry.
No,
it was right in front of me. I didn't see.
Thanks. You made me look smarter than I am. Anybody else? Carla, would you please call the vote?
Fritz.
So I'm very happy to support this. We do have a dire need in many of our neighborhoods for better streets. I would have preferred if there were sidewalks included, but I recognize why that can't be in this particular project. I'm hopeful as we continue to target this funding that we will prepare a foundation for attaching those sidewalks. And I'm very happy that we were able to get more projects, and I commend the mayor and all the folks involved in this for making sure that it happens. And I'm glad to see that the bids are coming in under estimate. However, it does show how desperate the community firms are for work. And that, my understanding is, most of the bids were way under the estimate also. So it's good for the taxpayers, and it means we can get more projects done. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Thanks for the great team at PBOT for getting this done. Aye. So approved. Can you please read the title for procurement report item number 296?
Accept bid of Moore Excavation, Inc. for the Walker Creek culvert replacement for $939,625.
Ms. Moody.
Christine Moody, Procurement Services. You have before you the Chief Procurement Officer report recommending a contract award to the low bidder in the amount of $939,625. The city identified eight divisions of work for potential minority women and emerging small business subcontracting opportunities. Participation on this project is at 24%, and work is being performed in the areas of hauling services and corrosion control. So I'll turn this back over to Council if you have any questions about the bidding process.
Questions for Questions on this matter? Anyone wish to testify on procurement report item number 296? Carla, can you please call the vote on the procurement report?
Fritz?
I don't know who Walker Creek was named after, but I have to note that Betty Walker, who is a longtime neighborhood activist in the Sabin neighborhood in Northeast Portland, passed away recently. So I wanted to honor her work in the city by mentioning her when I'm voting aye on this.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 196 is approved. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance item number 197?
Authorize a $105,222 grant agreement with the Center for Intercultural Organizing as part of the Diversity and Civic Leadership Academy for the period December 17, 2009 through June 30, 2010.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm pleased to welcome Jerry Williams, the program coordinator of the Diversity and Civic Leadership Program with the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, and Casey Jama, the director of the Center for Intercultural Organizing, who will tell us about this.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Jerry Williams, and I'm the project manager for the Diversity and Civic Leadership Projects with the Office of Neighborhood Involvement with the City of Portland. We're here today to present the Leadership Academy to authorize this grant agreement. The project is in its third year and has created many great opportunities for communities to engage with the city in a way they had never have before. It has been both a privilege and an honor to support this work and to be one of the people who get to stand at the door of City Hall and welcome folks in. Through these DCL projects, hundreds of people have become leaders and advocates in their communities. They have met elected officials and they have contributed their valuable input through the processes that the City of Portland performs. In the last year and a half, 28 new leaders from the DCL projects have joined many of Portland's boards and commissions and work groups and are currently working with the staff of the mayor's office and the planning department to get their input into the Portland plan process. They know how important it is to incorporate their visions into our collective future. The goals of the project are to support efforts to build organizational capacity and leadership skills of community organizations of color, immigrant and refugee communities to be more effective advocates for the advancement of policies to achieve economic and social equity. Some recent successes of the Leadership Academy include the City of Beaverton, which is currently working with CIO to replicate this program for the City of Beaverton, and their large participation in the planning of the future of the Memorial Coliseum. They actually put forth a plan that scored fairly high. We want to thank you for the continued support to increase the voices of all Portlanders.
In fact, was selected as an alternative if any of the three drop out.
Well, good morning, Mayor Sam Adams and the commissioners. It's a great privilege also for me to speak on this particular grant. As Jerry Williams said, the purpose of this grant is basically to diversify the city's leadership and particularly allow and create a space where immigrant and refugee community members as well as the people of color can be at the table in decision-making process in our city and become active residents of the city of Portland, city affairs. For the last 2 years, about 67 graduates graduated both the Center for Intercultural Organizing's Leadership Development Program as well as the Latina Network, which is our partner in this process. But I also want to underline, although this particular grant is part of the contract with the Center for Intercultural Organizing and the Latina Network, as you know, we are also part of the DCL program, which we are now at the table and collaborating with organizations such as NEA, IRCO, Urban League of Portland. So not only did it create a space for the immigrant refugee community, but it also allowed us to build a strong relationship with the long-term community of color and also neighborhood associations as well as the... many of the graduates actually are participated in the ONIS back meetings. We are having been developing relationship with the neighborhood associations and coalition leaders. And I think we are coming to the point that where we are right now, where we both the neighborhood coalitions as well as the our leaders in this program, we both understand the importance of collaborating and supporting each other. So although the program has a long-term goal, we do believe we have some important successes that we can celebrate, and we're going to continue to build the leaders in our community. Thank you.
Well, I want to thank you both as well for your help. And goodness knows there's a lot more work to do on the Portland plan effort, so thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thanks for your testimony. Anyone else wish to testify on this matter?
No one signed up.
Please call the vote.
Fritz?
This is an example of our 2010 Office of Neighborhood Involvement, where we are including new folks, old folks, folks who've been here for a long time, folks who have newly come into this country. And I'm very excited about this program and just want to repeat that the Center for Intercultural Organizing has graduated 67 new immigrant and refugee leaders through this program, and that we now have 28 new leaders involved in city boards, commissions, and committees. So it's a program which I'm very happy to be involved in and very proud to be a leader in. I thank Amalia Alacondamaris, the Director of the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, Jerry and Casey, both of your work has been exemplary, Brian Hoop. I also want to thank Mayor Tom Potter for his leadership, his vision, and his legacy in Portland to have promoted the vision of an inclusive Portland and which we're now putting into implementation. And thank Mayor Adams for your commitment to continuing to do this and indeed to expand on our program. As Casey said, it's not only the new Portlanders, the immigrant and refugee communities, it's the established Portlanders, particularly the Native American folks and the African American communities who've been here for a long time, who we now, they're not new partners, they're our valued partners. And in our Office of Neighborhood Involvement budget the last 2 years, we have held harmless the diverse community leadership program, recognizing that it's been too long and we're not yet at the point where we have full inclusion, full equity, but we're certainly all committed to that. So I am very excited to bring this to you today. Just, it's one example, and sometimes it's difficult in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement and perhaps in the Office of Human Relations to explain what we do and how we do it and who we do it with and for. This is an example that comes to you with numbers of what the program funding does and who it helps include. So thank you very much. Aye.
Fish?
Thank you for your testimony. And Commissioner Fritz, thank you for your leadership on this. And the Academy is indeed a terrific program, which commands our respect and our support. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, thank you, Jerry and Casey, for great work. And this is it's proven to be a very successful avenue to get more diverse people involved in city government through boards and commissions. So you're to be commended for that. And good luck with Beaverton, too. I'm sure they'll be a beneficiary of this program as well. Aye.
Leonard.
Thank you very much. Aye.
Adams.
Great work. Thank you.
Aye. Thank you.
So approved. Can you please read the title for non-emergency ordinance item number 298?
Authorize a $3,000 grant agreement and memorandum of agreement with Portland Community Media as part of their Smart Access Partnership with Office of Neighborhood Involvement, Central Northeast Neighbors, and Southwest Neighbors, Inc. for the period January 1, 2010 through December 31, 2010.
Commissioner Fritz.
This is a $3,000 grant, which some would think is a small amount, and indeed it is. And so I'm pleased to welcome Brian Hoop, the manager of the Neighborhood Resource Center in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, and Cece Hughley-Noel, the Chief Operations Officer of Portland Community Media, to tell you just how much we can do with $3,000.
Hi.
Again, Brian Hoop with Office of Neighborhood Involvement. So why are we establishing this partnership? It's our goal to help build the capacity of our community partners and their staff to utilize social media and video production for better documenting ONI Office Neighborhood Involvement funded programs, their performance, and helping to tell the story of their successes. Who are these partners? It's the 7 neighborhood district coalitions. It's the 95 neighborhood associations. As you heard in the last item, the 6 diversity and civic leadership programs that we fund: Urban League, Latino Network, Immigrant Refugee Community Organization, Native American Youth Family Center, Elders in Action, and Resolutions Northwest are groups that we're all trying to help give them new capacity, new resources for using social media and video production skills. We're wanting to build their capacity, especially with the neighborhood groups, to also better engage and work with a more diverse range of constituencies they've historically not worked with. And in this project, as Cece will talk a little bit more about, they've been successful at already engaging lower-income residents and a number of I think a large percentage of the participants were Native American individuals who took part in some of the initial workshops. Now, this is a great match between the Office Neighborhood Involvement and Portland Community Media. It meets PCM's goals as an approach to community outreach intended to serve the technology and multimedia needs of underserved and undersupported individuals and communities. It matches ONI's goals to increase the number and diversity of people who are involved and volunteer in their communities and neighborhoods, and it strengthens community and neighborhood capacity to build identity, their skills, and relationships and partnerships. This grows out of the recommendation from the five-year plan to increase community involvement in Portland, passed about 4 years ago, specifically promoting effective communication tools to keep the community informed about issues, opportunities for involvement, and ways to plug in. Specifically, strategies from that report spoke to promoting dialogue and communication through new technologies and promoting culturally appropriate outreach and communication strategies. And we find that this ties into our efforts to better develop our capacity to measure our performance through narratives and storytelling. A methodology that we've heard from our community partners is more culturally appropriate. While we're still developing more of our more quantitative measures, better quantitative measures, storytelling still is probably the best tool we have for talking about civic engagement work. And what will this grant cover? So ONI will take the lead and will operate as a smart access center by co-hosting multimedia training workshops in partnership with Central Northeast Neighbors and Southwest Neighborhoods, Inc. And we're hoping that this will be the first of several years. It's a three-year grant they have a three-year grant, which she'll talk more about. Portland Community Media will provide trainers, curriculum, and materials and equipment to support these trainings. And those workshops, some examples of the workshops that will be provided, do-it-yourself video, so how to use your camcorders to produce and share videos. Two, social networking, using Facebook, LinkedIn, et cetera, to promote your group. Social media, getting your videos on the web, so learning how to compress and upload your video onto websites such as YouTube or Blip TV. Digital storytelling, sharing our community's stories, such as how to effectively use your camcorder, flip video cameras to produce the best possible results. And lastly, producing multimedia for your community, a workshop where participants learn how to tell their story using video, how to conduct interviews, understanding the fundamentals of field audio and camera operation, and editing with Final Cut Pro. And lastly, as Commissioner Saltzman has suggested in the past, for ONI to consider creating welcome packets. We're going to work with PCM to develop an outline or curriculum to, in the future, hopefully next year, do digital welcome packet workshops to help neighborhood associations and business associations and others learn how to create DVD packets.
Great.
Thank you, Brian. Let me tell you a little bit about the Smart Access Program. Oh, I feel very height challenged right now. Right there. The Smart Access Program is Portland Community Media's new innovative approach to bring technology training to different locations with our community partners, as Brian said. We're hoping to expand our geographic and demographic reach in delivering these services. Smart Access means, and I have to kind of read this, shared mobile applications responsive technology, the ability to leverage, technology in our communities, as well as to be more responsive and collaborative and flexible, adapting to changes in technology and the needs of our community. The Smart Access Program was the vision of our CEO, Sylvia McDaniel, who wanted to ensure that Portland Community Media could increase its capacity to serve its entire catchment area, which is the entire city of Portland, with technology and multimedia services. In this new economy, especially, Portland Community Media has been inundated with inquiries from people wanting to learn new technology skills. The primary goal of Smart Access, however, is to help reduce the barriers and bridge the digital divide amongst those that are underserved and people of color. We believe the program will improve awareness of PCM as a multi-platform community media center
that promotes multimedia, new media, and technology education and training more than just cable access, although we're very proud to be, you know, providing the service to the City of Portland and have City Council on our channels. We also hope that this partnership with nonprofits will leverage the resources for service delivery, as funding continues to be an issue for a lot of nonprofits in town, including PCM. The funding for the Smart Access Program came from the Mount Hood Cable Regulatory Commission. It's a capital grant that we've used those funds to, you know, to purchase production and other capital equipment to serve the program. But we are working in partnership with our community-based partners to leverage our operational expenses and to bring this training and access to the production equipment to our partner sites. So we're really pleased to be working with ONI to provide this because of their deep partnership with the communities who we are hoping to target, those who are underserved, people of color, immigrants, refugees, and seniors. Last fall, we initiated a pilot program with Central Northeast Neighbors at their facility off of Northeast Sandy Boulevard at 87th Avenue, and we were very successful in our approach. We were overfilled in the classes that we provided. I wanted to share some statistics about what we discovered in the first phase of the program. We had a total of 56 participants in the orientation in late October. Registrations for the workshop series that we offered in November were full or overfull. We really reached into the community and with CNN, and we were able to exceed our demographic target goals. We had participants who were members of Latina Corazon, NAYA, the Columbia SLU Watershed Council, the Hollywood Senior Center, the Society for Haitian Arts and Culture, neighborhood associations, and community and parents for public schools that participated this fall. We also had 5 participants at the orientation that required language translation, and we were able, along with CNN, to offer simultaneous interpretation of the orientation and the information that was offered, as well as written translation of our course descriptions. And we are very pleased to offer that through our partnership with Tierra, who offers Spanish language training. In addition to that, our demographic survey of the participants this fall was really reflective of our community and who we're trying to reach through this program. 28% of the participants described their race or ethnicity as Native American who participated. We had 3% describe themselves as Hispanic, 6% as Black or African American, and 63% as white, which is pretty reflective of the community that we're serving, and it helps us to reach our targets of reaching the underserved.
That's a very significant number for Native American folks at 28%.
I'll have to say that that commitment is really owned by CNN, who has established really deep partnerships with the communities in their area. We've been very pleased to work with CNN, and we're very excited about working with Sweeney here coming on board here pretty soon, of course, Sony. We also reached across the digital divide to really reach low-income folks. About 31% of the participants last fall described their income as earning less than $20,000 annually. Some people might not think that's poor, but we had the brackets, so we didn't go deeper than that. But I think that that's significant. Technology is out of the reach of a lot of our community, and this program is designed to really help provide the training to use these new technologies so people can function in a modern environment. It will help increase their skills so they can be more competitive when they go to look for work. It helps them learn how to work together in teams, and it brings them into the majority culture and into the mainstream to begin to effectively communicate across these platforms, so we're very pleased about that. This winter, we offered a couple of more classes at CNN, going a little bit deeper in terms of the skill set. Producing multimedia for your community is our Smart Access version of our field production class, and digital storytelling, which really is, I call it the Ken Burns model of documentary making. It gives us the opportunity to utilize media that they already exist, still photographs, in some cases audio, you know, recordings, whatever, music, to tell a compelling story. And what we expect to come, we're in the home stretch for those classes this term at CNN, A couple of the projects that are in the pipeline are a showcase of Haitian relief efforts in Portland and a video that's interviewing the elders at the Native American Youth and Family Center. So we're really excited to see the product from that. We're really pleased to enter into this partnership with the Office of Neighborhood Involvement and their diversity and civic leadership partners because it can really help us meet our goals of reaching deeply and broadly to the entire city of Portland geographically, but also because of their partnerships with the district coalitions and the DCL, we're really reaching those target populations that have been underserved in civic media in the past. We're very happy about that. The statistics that are coming out of the community ascertainment study that the Mount Hood Cable Regulatory Commission is currently wrapping up in preparation for our franchise renewal with Comcast really indicates that there are some significant disparities amongst people of color and their access to technology. We are really pleased to enter into this agreement to bring the multimedia training and access to this fairly expensive equipment to more and different people in the city of Portland, and I would be more than happy to answer any questions that you have at this time.
Well, I would just note that according to the numbers that I've seen, and I think this supports what you're doing, is that the digital divide is never, in terms of communication, the communication divide has never been more narrow than it is right now in the history of this nation when it comes to cellular text, not necessarily smartphones, but text, that when you look at the numbers that among races and actually among incomes, that more people have access to simple cell phones and text than ever before. So if you could look at opportunities for communication on the simple sort of text platform, that would be great. And I also think it's fantastic that the commissioner in charge of ONI has signed up to get on the bandwagon with things like Twitter and Facebook. And I just want to publicly acknowledge this commitment of yours. It's wonderful.
Well, good. I'm glad you said that, because I was just about to comment on your brilliance in assigning me both the Office of Cable Communications and Franchise Management and the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. Happily, I have wonderful staff in both of those bureaus. I also have staff at home who are really technology savvy, and my son and my husband are both good on the whole video, Facebook, Twitter, goodness knows what else. Therefore, I will not be signing up for that particular class. Thank you for your concern.
Oh, no, I think it's important you try. We'll keep working on her.
Thank you. Thank you, Mary Adams.
Yeah, maybe you can get me involved in that.
Absolutely.
Getting involved in the texting platform. Anyway, I just wanted to say that you're doing a lot for $3,000 here. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Brian Hoop mentioned something I've always been saying we should do, which is kind of bring back the welcome wagon concept, mm-hmm. which is when somebody moves into a neighborhood, you know, they get, first of all, they get something that lets them know who their neighborhood, what neighborhood association they live in, when the neighborhood meets. You know, I would think maybe local merchants would be providing some sort of coupons for discounts. Mm-hmm. And so, Brian, you described something that's, you know, obviously sounds great. Mm-hmm. So it'll be a digital welcome wagon is what we're talking about. Is that?
Go for it. It's in development. We want to work very closely with the ONI staff and most likely with neighborhood associations who've been successful in some version of the welcome packet to develop a curriculum that would establish a template so that all 95 neighborhood associations and what are we up to now, 45 business districts associations can have access to developing something that is dynamic enough for them to be able to update it themselves and have it be current and distributable in whatever format they want.
So a template kind of resource.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess the only, this sounds great, and I'd like to see, you know, the template when it's ready, but I guess the only thing I was thinking about, I mean, you can find out when somebody moves into a neighborhood usually because there's a, you know, change of address or something like that, but I'm not sure how you get somebody's email address necessarily unless they already come to a neighborhood meeting and sign up.
So. Well, it wouldn't be an email. It would be a DVD disc that then has resources, you know, digital resources on it, like you said, potentially. Mm-hmm. I hadn't thought about coupons, electronic coupons yet, but and we don't know the details yet. I just really admire your continued reminding us of this type of resource that we should develop. So Okay. Just want to acknowledge we've remembered that, and hopefully we'll start to develop that.
I admired, he means. This is only a $3,000 contract.
Yeah, I was going to say, some more money, please.
Yeah, seriously. Anyway. Yes, we know it's not very much money, but it will really leverage what it is that we're able to provide. We actually have offered the multimedia training through our partnerships at an extraordinarily deep discount in order for us to reach out to those people who are living in poverty and make access to this training and technology much more affordable. The amount of money that we're paying is has taken into consideration the nonprofits and their budgets, but also our major goal is to reach out to these populations. So part of the funds goes to offset what some of our costs for contract trainers, but also what it does is the community-based partner covers the cost of what would normally be a community producer's activity fee, which is $50 a year, which is pretty phenomenal for access to this much equipment. So
thank you for all of your work.
You're welcome.
Really,
we got to move on.
Thank you so very much. We appreciate it.
Commissioner Fritz has to run out and sign up for Twitter. Unless there's anyone that would like to testify on this matter, please call the vote.
This is a non-emergency.
This moves to a second reading next week. Can you please read titles, emergency ordinances 299 to 302?
299, authorize a grant agreement with the Youth Employment Institute for Spring Break 2010 Youth Program. 300, authorize a grant agreement with Charitable Partnership Fund for Spring Break 2010 Youth Program. 301, authorize a grant agreement with the Immigrant and Refugee Community Organization for Spring Break 2010 Youth Program. And 302, authorize a grant agreement with Journeys Foundation for Spring Break 2010 Youth Program.
Commissioner
Salzman. Thank you, Mayor. Given the time, I'll dispense with my 30-minute introduction of this topic.
Darn.
Keeping kids busy and engaged when they are not in school is key to keeping them safe and preventing them from getting involved in negative activities. That is why the Portland Office of Youth Violence Prevention is funding four small grants for spring break activities for at-risk youth. So I'd like to introduce Rob Ingram, who is the director of the Office of Youth Violence Prevention, and Tom Peavy, and they're going to just give us a quick highlight of the programs we're going to be supporting over spring break.
Excellent. First, thank you very much, and good morning, commissioners. I want to start by saying first, thank you for your continued support of the work of the Office of Youth Violence Prevention. Over the past year, we've been able to establish 10 outreach positions. We've been able to strengthen partnerships with the police bureau as well as our community service providers, and we've been able to have more of an impact on the safety of our community. Today, we're here to talk about our spring break specific programs. In January, we created an RFG for spring break programs to run March 20th through 28th. We had 39 organizations show up to our mandatory bidders conference. 19 of those organizations actually applied for the grant funding. The grant funding dollar amount is a $20,000 grant total that's going to be divided up to four organizations. Those four grants will range in amounts from $4,000 to $6,000. We actually have representatives from all four of the awarded agencies in the audience with us today. And if you look on your screen, we'll go through a brief PowerPoint of how those monies will be distributed. The purpose of the grants is to provide structured and engaging activities to Portland's at-risk youth. The specifics for those programs that we're looking for are youth between the ages of 13 to 21, youth who have had contact with the juvenile justice system, youth who are pregnant or parenting, youth who are in foster care or who have aged out of foster care, youth who are not engaged in GED or diploma programs, and or youth who are not engaged in current programming. So our most targeted population is really going to be those youth that are most at risk, but really any young person that's not engaged in any type of a program, because we understand that out-of-school time is crucial for young people. Youth employment training will be engaging 35 at-risk youth between the ages of 13 to 21, 6 days of programming, including multicultural leadership training, first aid training, financial literacy training, job readiness training, resume training, and certification, as well as a first aid certification and food handler's card, which we think is an excellent investment of our funds. Community service college and business exploration through ERCO will provide programming for 80-plus at-risk youth between the ages of 15 through 21. 5 days of activities to include recreation, community service project, college and career exploration, and we may actually have them snooping around your offices to do some career exploration. They've offered tours of local community colleges and numerous area businesses. The arts will support 30 to 40 high school-aged youth, 1 week of filmmaking with emphasis on cultural brokenness and violence prevention, professionally guided, resulting in production and screening, and we're happy to say that that one will actually include a finished product that we'll all be able to share with each other. Structured sports instruction and mentoring will serve 29 youth at risk through the ages of 13 and 14, identified with immeasurable barriers, lack of supervision, poor grades, and economic hardship. 5 days of training, including college-level instructors and special guest speakers. What I like about this one is that it actually blends sports as well as sports careers and other things that sports can teach our young people, such as teamwork and leadership. That's all I've got, unless you guys have any questions. I wanted to keep it short and simple today.
So, council questions or discussion? Thank you for your excellent presentation. And these are all, Carla, has anyone signed up to testify?
Veronica Bernier did.
And she's not with us. So these are all emergency items. Let's take them one at a time. We have the requisite quorum.
Fritz.
Well, thank you for your work on this. And it's really cost-effective for the youth that are involved, the amount of money that we're paying. And some people might say that it's only a few youth who are able to be involved in these programs, but it matters a lot to those youth who are. So, and we help them one at a time. So thank you for your work. Aye.
Saltzman?
Dan, in addition to their good work here, I just want to once again acknowledge our partnership around teen programs in the summertime. There's an ad package for $500,000, vitally important programs, and also your stalwart support of the Youth Conservation Corps, which gives young people not only work skills, but the opportunity to become good environmental stewards.
We actually started that one already, and so the GRUNT program is up and running. They've had 2 Saturdays of instruction so far, and that will run through spring break, and then those young people will actually serve right into the summer. Those will become summer employment opportunities, thanks to the work of the 2 commissioners on my right.
Thank you very much. So I'm pleased to vote aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I want to echo what Commissioner Fritz said. These are small grants for, maybe 150 youth, just adding it up there. But these are youth that are at risk for getting involved in gang activities. And this is a constructive activity that we need to make sure is in place to serve as many kids as possible over spring break. And I just wanted to also, acknowledge Rob Ingram and Tom Peavy and their, for a 2-person office, their fame is growing every day. Rob Ingram, in January, was awarded the Scanners Drum Major of Justice Award. And Tom Peavy's son, Greg Peavy, was on the front page of the sports section this week for pitching a 3-hitter for the Oregon State Beavers in their 1-0 victory over Tennessee, I believe.
That's correct.
So their fame grows every day, but their work matches their fame. It's good, high-quality stuff, so I'm pleased to vote aye.
Thank you. Thank you.
Leonard.
Thank you. That's very great. Thank you, both Rob and Tom. Appreciate it. Aye.
299 passes. Carla, would you please call the roll on 300?
Fritz.
Commissioner Saltzman, you do so much good work, and a lot of it is plugging away at things like this, and I just wanted to read who is affected by this particular grant. Youth who have had contact with the juvenile justice system, youth who are parenting or pregnant, youth who are in foster care, school dropouts who are not engaged in the GED or diploma programs. So these are truly the youth who are not being served by anybody else and who are most at risk, and this grant will help them. Aye.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye. Member passes. Carla, could you please call the roll on item 301?
Fritz.
This is with the Immigrant and Refugee Community Organization, who we heard from earlier, and very pleased for that. They're a partner with ONI as well. Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye. Matter passes. Carla, could you please call the roll on item 302?
Fritz.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye. Item 302 passes. Thank you, gentlemen. We have one additional item. Carla, would you please read item number 303?
Authorized contract with CH2M Hill, Inc. to develop the 2010 combined sewer overflow facilities plan required by the State of Oregon to define CSO reduction after the completion of the 20-year CSO program.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. President. This ordinance authorizes the city to enter into an agreement with CH2M Hill to develop our 2010 CSO facilities plan. As you know, we're building the Big Pipe project, but as essential to building the Big Pipe project is making sure that our system operates efficiently and effectively, and that we continue to make sure that our investments in green infrastructure are actually doing what they're supposed to do, and that's what we're hiring CH2M Hill to do here. It is required by the state that we submit this report to them. CH2M Hill is using a subconsultant, EPC, which is a minority business enterprise. And since we have to submit this by September 1st of this year, that's why it's on an emergency basis, and the total contract will not exceed $200,000.
Mr. Saltzman, is there any reason you can think of today why we should not adopt this matter?
None whatsoever.
Council discussion? Seeing none, Carla, would you please call the roll?
To call for testimony?
Or to testify. Fritz?
I didn't know that was available. It wasn't sitting out there.
Call her up.
Call the roll, please.
No, call her up. You have to allow her to testify if she wants to testify.
Ma'am, would you like to testify in this matter? Please, go ahead. Come up. Come up. Could you state your name? And you have 3 minutes.
Hi, my name is Beth John Syracuse, and I am a citizen, so I don't belong to any group. And I'm saying right now to you all that every research I have done with CH2M Hill has pulled up nothing but things that make me angry. How about that? I don't want to say things that I don't absolutely know, but I also know that Joe Glicker, who is vice president of CH2M Hill, has been involved with the EPA. The EPA is having problems with their scientists, and their scientists aren't supporting a lot of the political oversight. We have oversight here that's political. It's not being done by the scientists. CH2M Hill is also in their testing for cryptosporidium, which is basically a conflict of interest because they're also wanting to build the UV plant or do all the work on that. So I think that we really need to put a distance between us and CH2M Hill, because I think that they're going to be looked at in the longer run when we start looking at what's going on with the EPA and what's going on with the political bullying that's going on with our water system. Our water system, as you all well know, is a good water system, Randy Leonard. You have that. It's been 110 years. Joe Glicker wrote, let's cover the manual for uncovered reservoirs, and in it, it's all fear-based. Everything that he said to the EPA on that was from closed reservoirs. The bird poop that was in it, and everything was from closed reservoirs. It wasn't from open reservoirs. We have great open reservoirs. We have new technology that needs to be explored, not this old stuff. We have stuff going on up in Spokane with CH2M Hill, where they're all up in arms in what happened over there with the EPA. So this stuff really needs to be looked into and not just blanketed, okay, let's let CH2M Hill do this because of Joe Glicker. I don't know who Joe Glicker is to you other than maybe a very charming person that gets everything done. But to me, this Joe Glicker is not to the benefit of our city, not to the benefit of our water system. Why do we keep going back to this man? Why is it that he's in every document from 02 when you had the Water Bureau to, and you said, nope, you don't have anything to do with Watson, who he used to work for, but now he's working for CH2M Hill. So here we are with an EPA agency where they're all going transparency. We have problems. We're having problems with all this stuff that's going on with the water. We want to get a transparency thing going on, and now we have this over here. We need to stop this. This is, and I'm not the only one that's holding this.
Thank you very much. Your time is up. Thank you for your testimony. Carla, is anyone else?
Veronica has requested to speak.
Veronica, thank you for joining us. If you just give us your first and last name, and you have 3 minutes.
3 minutes. Oh, good. 3-minute warning. Ha. Let's see. I guess the middle chair is the best one for me since I'm kind of middle of the road, so to speak. There we are. Oh, perfect. Good alignment. Good morning, Mayor Sam Adams. I guess he stepped out for that other meeting down the hall. That's good. So you almost have a complete quorum for this discussion. I am reminded of Commissioner Randy Leonard's in the past of your support of the Old Bull Run and all of their water effort. That's not what we're talking about now. However, in order to be an expert witness about water problems and pipes and sewages, not sewage, but pipe treatment in certain areas, I would have to quote somebody from the past, and that is former Commissioner Eric Sten. Now, we all know former Mayor Vera Katz. Mrs. Katz, I call her Mrs. Katz, Vera. Not too many people call her Vera because she's very formal, but former Mayor Vera Katz and Eric Sten had a unique relationship as regards any building and piping and anything being done with the city. Their regard for the city structures and water and piping and all the things along the continuum of the city were taken in a certain perspective, that is for city growth. Whenever we approach anything about water or piping or construction or even, destruction or demolition, they always had a big quorum and the expert witnesses. Now, in the past, my uncle, Bob, was part of the U.S. Navy Water Bureau for the Hetch Hetchy Reservoir in San Francisco. If there were ever any problems with water piping or whatever, he was one of the first team to go in, get a sample in, analyze it so you knew what was coming out of your water tap. As this regards to that, there is some planning that is going on in the future that we know is big, and it regards pipes, it regards water position, and also demography or topography of the land. When we get to this point, I have to look at former women in history, like former Mayor Vera Katz, because she had a firm stand and a grip on this town that you wouldn't believe. I mean, you have to know. We used to call her the Red Queen. That was not to her face, of course, but she did have a good. All right.
We won't, Veronica. You can count on us to keep it in this room.
She watches us.
We won't share that.
I know she's around her somewhere. Okay.
We won't share that.
I just wanted to share with you. Unilateral. Looking at this problem, for the future, take every step wisely. We always do. And Hetch Hetchy was a good water source. So is Bull Run. There is no city with a Bull Run water source or piping quite like ours. And I just wanted to mention right now, right across the street, they're having the Women's Kickoff for Women in History Month. You can join that for a 12-to-1 brown bag. Get to know those ladies, too.
Veronica, thank you again for your testimony.
You're welcome.
I think I speak for my colleagues when I say you made our day today.
I hope so.
Carla, would you please call the roll?
Fritz.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye. The matter passes. Are there any other additional council items? Hearing none, we are adjourned. Thank you, Carla.
Thank you. I thought it was going to be quiet.
Not in public life.
Apparently not. Even I was naive about that.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad.
Thank you. Thank you.
What's your wife's name?
Katie. I've actually known her for 25 years. We lived together in the 80s for a number of years.
Oh,
for some reason, at some point in there, she thought I was too difficult and left me. So, what was up with that? I don't.
Well, I'm glad.
But I've,
Thank
you very much.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah. Good. And you're going to be taking spring break off to the grandson?
Actually, no. We're just kidding. I'm going to go to California.
Choosing spring break to
that? I don't know why. But we did. Actually, it was an accident. Just picked the date. So I haven't looked at it. Right. Yeah. So I didn't even think about it. Just spring break. Probably not the best idea.
Commissioner Leonard, is there any possible way that we can do something with the EPA stuff?
Well, yeah, I think you hit on it. It's Jeff Merkley, Ron Wyden. It's a federal law. And so we have to comply.
I get that. Well, what I was hoping was that maybe you could pitch in with the citizens at this point.
Well, I flew back there and met with
him. I understand that.
I talked with Jeff. Like,
but what's going on with Joe Glicker? Why is he so in all this?
I'm not sure you're...
Yeah, I do. I have.
I've got it.
But I do. I have been looking through it all. And he's been involved with all of it.
But he does.